Hello, I'm Fully Batibo. This is Counting the Cost on Al Jazeera, your look at the world of business and economics. This week, it's been dubbed the crypto winter. A recent meltdown in the digital coins value has caused panic among investors. So what's behind the slump? And can the tokens make a strong comeback? Also this week, Apple loses its title of the world's most valuable company to Saudi energy giant Aramco. That says global stock markets suffered their worst weekly losing streak since the 2008 financial crisis. And governments are tightening their grip on food supplies. India has joined a list of countries banning grain exports. So how could that affect prices, and can trade protectionism be avoided? Thank you for joining us. Wild swings are common with cryptocurrencies, but not many would have predicted stable coins that are touted as secure could crash. The unexpected fall in prices has sent the crypto world into meltdown as investors went into what's been compared to a traditional run on the banks. Bitcoin reached its lowest point since 2020, and more than $500 billion have been knocked off of the sector's trillion-dollar total market value. The coins later recovered some ground, but investor sentiment remains volatile. The plunge in the cryptocurrency was driven by the collapse of stablecoins, which are tied to the value of traditional assets, often the U.S. dollar with a one-to-one peg. That in practice means it should not fluctuate in price. Terra Luna has lost almost its entire value, and that had a knock-on effect on its sister stablecoin, the Terra USD, tanking to a low of around 20 cents. Terra was ranked among the 10 most valuable cryptocurrencies and peaked at almost $120 last month. Tether, the biggest stablecoin and one whose developers say is backed by dollar assets, also fell to 95 cents. Now, the sell-off has driven the prices of other cryptocurrencies down. Bitcoin, the largest cryptocurrency by total market value, fell as low as $26,000, down 60% from its peak of almost $70,000 in November. The digital coin was back at around $30,000 in the past 10 days. Several other digital coins regained some of the losses too. The rebound comes as cryptocurrency has seen more than $1 trillion in value vanish in the past 6 months. But the sell-off did not stop El Salvador's push into cryptocurrencies. The country's government added more than $15 million worth of bitcoins to its balance sheet as the currency traded at its lowest point in 6 months. It is El Salvador's largest coin purchase since it became the first country to adopt bitcoin as legal tender alongside the U.S. dollar. El Salvador's bet on bitcoin has already led to losses that equal the cash-strapped nation's next interest payment to bondholders. Well, for more on the future of the digital coins, I'm joined now by Naeem Aslam, a chief market analyst at Ava Trade. He joins us from London. Naeem, thank you so much for being on Counting the Cost. Digital currencies plunging is not something uncommon. We've seen this before. But is it different this time? And what is behind this cryptocurrency crash?
Sure. Thanks for having me, as always. I think you're hitting the nail on the head by saying that this is not uncommon when it comes to crypto space, because crypto is a completely different beast. It can fall as much as 80% from its recent highs, or from its all-time highs. And within the next matter of months, if not weeks, we could see new all-time highs. Now, what is behind the current sell-off is all about sentiment. We were already in a bear market. Prices were struggling to move to the upside. When that was really taking place, we had this massive explosion in the Terra Luna, or should we say this, in the stable coin, or the so-called stable coin space, which adversely influenced the market and really pulled the rug under many investors and traders, and we saw this massive sell-off.
Right. The crash was driven by stable coins. What caused stable coins to crash, and how stable is stable coins in the end?
Yeah, sure. Look, I think we need to define stable coins very clearly, and bear with me while I explain everything in that. In the normal fiat currency world, which is a regulated market, we have something, a term is called bank run, which means that you can only allow to take certain amount of money on if there's an immense uncertainty in the market. In the crypto world, we do not have that. Mm. This is the major difference between stable coins and the fiat currency, which is regulated by central banks. So what happened with the Terra Luna was pessimism because of a one whale triggering a massive trade, and the algorithm, which was supposed to maintain the peg, went out of whack. Now, the bank run started. Enormous amount of traders began to withdraw money, and that led to this uncertainty for the climate and space that we are in.
Yeah. Naeem, if stable coins aren't stable, then what's crypto's safe space, if you will?
You see, so again, I would not classify them as stable. Look at Tether, where it is. The peg is still very much maintained. Now, remember, we did during the oil crisis in Eurozone, in the region, the Saudi peg came under immense pressure because of oil prices. Mm-hmm. But again, I mean, that's a fiat currency which has been there for ages and for decades, for a very long time. So I think stablecoin is still very much a new industry, mm-hmm. which will continue to evolve from.
Right. Now, many amateur investors took to buying stocks and digital currencies during the pandemic, of course, because and they made money because values were generally rising. What's been the impact on them? Some have said they could lose their houses and have lost their life savings. Is that right?
It is immensely important for any investor or trader to invest only what they can afford to lose. If you are betting your house on an industry which is already known for its volatility, you're not doing yourself a massive favor. It's all about portfolio allocation, mm-hmm. putting the right hedging strategies in your portfolio, and then taking on and moving on with that. Because, you know, crypto can fall up to 80%. And when the crypto is down only by 50% or 30%, you don't want to deploy all of your capital, all your reserve cash, all your liquidity lines into that, because that will only continue to increase more pressure as the price will drag to the downside.
Right. Naeem, now the U.S. Treasury Secretary has asked for more regulation. Lawmakers in other countries are also asking for more regulation. Do you think that will solve the problem?
Look, regulation is certainly a good sign because look at what Coinbase, that particular news brought. So like, all money is not secure. That's not the situation that we wanted to be in. Mm. We wanted to have that sort of a backup from the regulator that if I'm parking my capital at any exchange, no matter where it is, it needs to be regulated.
Now, let's talk about El Salvador now, the first nation in the world to declare Bitcoin as legal tender. This was, of course, a remarkable milestone for the crypto industry. But in hindsight, do you think this was a good decision for El Salvador itself?
Like, it's an adoption. And we've seen companies, we've seen hedge funds, we've seen countries, and we consistently see more countries joining that. I think it's going to be only within a matter of a few weeks when we will hear something major coming out of Russia as well. Mm. So I think it's a movement in the right direction.
All right. Naeem, one last question, if I may. I mean, what does the future look like for cryptocurrencies? There are fears that the dot-com bubble bursts of the early 2000s could be about to repeat. Do you share that concern?
Okay, so let's look at the dot-com 2000s bubble bust. Where was Amazon? Where was eBay? Where was Microsoft? Where was Intel? Where was AMD? Any of these companies, where are they today? We are going to see same sort of a phenomenon playing out over here as well. From my own personal view, I would be glad to see the prices going lower because I am that certain. Because the only momentum and the move is more likely to happen to the upside, and it's going to happen more rapidly and more. We're going to see more fast moves in the Bitcoin prices, especially if price breaks anything below than 20,000.
Okay, Naeem Aslam, thank you very much for the moment, but do stay with us. The fall in cryptocurrencies is part of a broader pullback from risky assets. Global stocks sank for 6 weeks in a row as the threat of a U.S. recession added to fears of investors already spooked by soaring inflation, coronavirus lockdowns in China, and Russia's invasion of Ukraine. As much as $11 trillion have been wiped from the markets during the worst losing streak since the 2008 financial crisis. Tech and growth stocks have suffered particularly steep losses, while retail shares led the declines in U.S. stocks, which recorded the biggest daily drop since the early months of the coronavirus pandemic last week. European and Asian stocks have recorded losses as well. Even assets considered safe, like gold and bonds, slid. But a recent analysis from Bank of America shows outflows from stock funds have been relatively stable. The bank estimates that for every $100 invested into the stock market since the start of last year, only $4 have been pulled out, while $61 for every $100 invested were pulled out during the COVID-19 stock market sell-off of 2020. It was even worse during the financial crisis of 2008. Investors redeemed $113 for every $100 they invested. An example of investor sentiment: an online survey found more than half of American respondents worry about a market crash, and almost 80% expect volatility to continue in the market this year. The survey of more than 1,000 people was conducted by Allianz Life's quarterly market perceptions in March. Meanwhile, the tech giant Apple has lost its position as the world's most valuable company to Saudi Arabia's oil and gas producer Aramco. The tech giant's stock market valuation stood at $2.37 trillion. Aramco was valued at $2.42 trillion. And the energy company has posted its highest profit since its 2019 listing, with a jump of more than 80% in earnings. Back to Naeem Aslam once again. Naeem, is the worst over for global stock markets, or will there be a mass exodus of investors leading to a prolonged bear market?
This is a really intriguing question. And I'm going to answer that by looking at two major fundamental factors that are very much pinning this particular price move. Firstly, is inflation at its peak? It doesn't really seem like it, especially when we start to focus on the ongoing conflict between Ukraine and Russia, and the further potential of that conflict escalating. Secondly, are those COVID restrictions completely out of question now? Well, not really. So to answer that particular question, look at where inflation is heading, because that is very much going to determine if that the bear market or the current sell-off or the fear in the market are over. Until and unless inflation continues to outpace expectations, consumer spending continues to remain pushed, and disposable income doesn't see any increment, I don't think the fundamentals are going to point to anything under which we will see a rally for the global stock market.
Yeah, markets certainly don't like uncertainty. How much is at stake, you know, if the war in Ukraine goes on and prolongs and the U.S. faces the threat of a recession?
Well, look, I think it's only a matter of a time when we will see commodity crisis around the world. We've seen COVID crisis, the new emerging crisis is going to be very much agriculture, soft commodity prices. We've seen restrictions coming from countries like India, which isn't even a major player when it comes to export of wheat. But look where the prices have gone. And both Ukraine and Russia, they are major grain producers. Any escalation of further tensions, especially in the light of what is happening with Finland and Sweden, is only going to make this matter more worse. So I think investors should take a more cautious approach with that. At the same time, start creating your bucket list, because there are enormous bargains out there as well now.
Yeah, well, let's talk about what people should be doing. I mean, crypto stocks and even gold have slid. Is it time to buy the dip, or is it time to pile up cash? I mean, what about people saving for their retirement plans, for example? What should they do?
So I think this is, again, goes back to our earlier conversation of asset allocation, diversification, hedging within one's portfolio. So I think given where the prices are, like the US stock indices down over 20%, 25%. So it does raises the question that you need to have your bucket list ready, your shopping list ready. What do you want it to buy? Now, how much of a portfolio allocation you wanted to do, that depends on one's risk.
Right. And we've seen, Naeem, investors flee risky assets. Where are they going to? Are they ditching technology for energy? I mean, we've seen Aramco take over Apple as the most valuable company this week.
I think that's a very short-term trend with Aramco, what is happening. And I've been very vocal around it. I think right now, it's the investors are just favoring, and then they know that oil prices or energy prices are likely to remain anchored in place purely because of geopolitical tensions and conflicts. And I think as long as Putin is still in command, the chances of that conflict easing off are very minuscule.
Naeem Aslam, thank you very much for talking to us on Counting the Cost.
Thank you, Brian.
Panic buying stripped grocery shelves during the pandemic. Now supplies are getting scarce as governments increasingly impose export restrictions. The new wave of trade barriers has been unleashed by the war in Ukraine and sanctions that followed. Sourcing grain has become harder and several countries are under pressure to secure their food stocks and keep costs in check for their people. The price of wheat has recently surged to a new record after India banned its exports, citing threats to food security. The decision comes as India, the world's second largest wheat producer, deals with a severe heat wave that could affect output. The U.S. says the ban could worsen food shortages globally. Washington, several global development banks and the World Bank have pledged billions of dollars to address the problem. At least 20 countries have imposed restrictions on food exports since the invasion of Ukraine, covering around 17% of calories traded globally. They include Indonesia, which has blocked crucial palm oil shipments. Turkey, Russia and Ukraine also banned the sales of grains, fertilizers, beef and other supplies. The trade restrictions come as global food prices rose to their highest ever levels in March. Well, from Sydney, I'm joined now by Tim Harkett, a professor and chief economist at the Institute for Public Policy and Governance at the University of Technology, Sydney. Tim, thank you so much for being with us on Counting the Cost. Global buyers were banking on India for wheat supplies, and the Indian government had said it would help avert a global crisis. Why did it backtrack?
Well, Prime Minister Modi did make the big offer once the Russia-Ukraine conflict occurred. Unfortunately, India has experienced temperatures of over 45 degrees Celsius at a minimum, and that's really hurt its capacity to provide the extra supplies that they'd promised. So they've really turned the corner and done a bit of a backflip.
But it's not just India. I mean, several governments have imposed trade restrictions. What's going to be the impact of these bans on food supplies in Africa and parts of Asia?
No, you're quite right. Indonesia, Turkey, India have put restrictions on their exports, quite a bit of a knee-jerk response. It means that countries like Australia are providing wheat not only to Indonesia and Philippines and their traditional trading partners in Asia, but also to Yemen in the Middle East and to Africa. And you've got countries like Turkey, Nigeria, Indonesia as three of the biggest importers of wheat in the world. And Australia is now filling that gap because of the situation in Ukraine.
And what impact, Tim, has that had on prices?
Well, it's added to the restrictions that we've seen with global supply chains. So it's only had a huge commodity price shock. And that's very, very difficult for the countries in Africa and the Middle East that have a large number of consumers who are very poor who need the food at reasonable prices.
So we've heard the WTO chief Ngozi Okonjo-Iweala warn about food protectionism. What can the WTO do, if anything, about the restrictions? Can it help secure supplies for vulnerable countries?
They can't supply countries. I mean, all they can do is urge the countries don't become protectionist, that don't turn their back. I know that the US Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen's putting the tariffs down in the US with respect to China. So all they can do is urge that countries don't return to protectionism and make the situation a lot worse. So really using their moral fervour of the pulpit, but they can't do anything legally to stop countries hanging on to their own food.
Mm. So WTO can't do anything legally, but we've heard the US government say that it would help. Will that be enough?
Well, certainly the major agricultural powers fought for free trade and agriculture in the WTO. So certainly I think the US and EU could lead by example, reducing their own agricultural protectionism that they've been very famous for. I mean, they used to send, with EU subsidies, you could send all the cows from France around the world business class twice. So, you know, if they lead by example, that could certainly help developing countries in Asia, in Africa and the Middle East to follow suit.
Yeah. Tim, food importers were already suffering from 2 years of pandemic supply chain shocks, and now those problems are being exacerbated by increasing food supply protectionism, as we've talked about. Do you think a hunger crisis can still be averted?
I think, folly, we're in for another GFC, not a global financial crisis, but a global food crisis. I don't think the actions by India and Indonesia on their own would have caused this crisis in a normal year. But when you take out Ukraine, when Ukrainian farmers are walking off their tractors and picking up guns to fight Russia, that puts an incredible shock on the world supply of wheat and barley and maize. And countries like Australia and Canada and Argentina can fill some of that gap, but not totally. So the Russia-Ukraine crisis has a lot to be, lot to answer for, not just in terms of its humanitarian cost on Ukraine, but its impact it's having on energy and indeed on food, on food prices and the hungry of the world.
Tim Harcourt, thank you very much for talking to us. Thank you for being on Counting the Cost.
Thank you for having me on the show.
Now, McDonald's is leaving Russia altogether and selling its restaurants after more than 30 years. The chain cited the humanitarian crisis and unpredictable operating environment caused by the war in Ukraine. McDonald's followed other Western companies and temporarily shut down its restaurants in Russia in March, shortly after the war began. The fast food giant will take a significant write-off from exiting Russia of up to $1.4 billion. The chain had more than 800 restaurants in Russia and almost 100 in Ukraine, which accounted for 9% of the company's revenue last year. President Joe Biden has announced steps to ease a nationwide shortage of baby formula that has left parents scrambling to feed their children. They include invoking the Defense Production Act, which requires suppliers to direct ingredients used in baby formula to key manufacturers first, reopening the largest domestic manufacturing plant and increasing imports. Heidi Jocastro reports from Washington.
I love you, Mommy.
I love you, Albert.
4-year-old Albert Butler wears a backpack filled with a specialty formula that slowly feeds him 22 hours a day. His mother, Jess Butler, says this is what her son with special needs must have to grow.
It was super critical when he was an infant, and this is like the only thing that he could tolerate, and it was kind of the first time we saw any growth out of him at all was on this formula.
But store shelves in the United States are running out of infant and toddler formula. The tracking firm DataAssembly reports there's 43% less of it nationwide. Pandemic supply chain problems started the trouble, and a factory closure in Michigan made it worse. Abbott Nutrition, maker of the popular Similac brand, halted production after several babies got sick and two died after drinking possibly contaminated formula. The government investigated and found no further danger, but the company says it will be weeks before production resumes. Butler has taken extraordinary measures to find formula for her son, even flying across the country to buy it from a woman she met online, only to be scammed.
She never showed and eventually just blew me off.
Parents say walking out of a store with baby formula can now feel like walking out with gold. Hoarding has become a concern, with stores now limiting how many they sell to each parent.
It's important to remember that for babies on formula, this is the only food option. There is no substitute. And I think we have to probably reevaluate what critical infrastructure really means.
Critics have blamed the White House for failing to help. For now, parents are making do by turning to food banks or just feeding their children less.
Let's all work together because these are babies. You know, they gotta eat.
For parents, there's no more urgent need than this, nutrition for their hungry children.
And that is our show for this week. Get in touch with us by tweeting me at @FullyBaAJE and do use the hashtag AJCTC when you do. Or drop us an email. countingthecost@aljazeera.net is our address. But there's more for you online at aljazeera.com/CTC. That will take you straight to our page, which has individual reports, links, and entire episodes for you to catch up on. And that is it for this edition of Counting the Cost. I'm Fully Batibo from the whole team here in Doha. Thank you for joining us. The news on Al Jazeera is next.